I think I put too many visuals, but we'll... All right. So actually, I've been a bit trapped in this symposium. The Academy asked me to speak about authorship within the exhibition I have curated with Alia Sebti and Mouna Mekouar in IFA Gallery, so it's still visible in Stuttgart. I'm not going to speak about what the exhibition stresses. I guess if you're interested, I can give you some insights. I'm going to speak about what's in the exhibition. And as you can guess from the title, in the carpet, we have mainly carpets in display from named and anonymous artists. So we have works with known and unknown authors. And actually, it made me think, because a carpet has a polysemous definition. And we have a new one as a signed and non-signed carpet now. I'm going to flip through some visuals without naming who has done what. But these are pieces that are shown in the exhibition, a few of them. And I have named this presentation, Authorship Begins with Self-Knowledge. So while there is a trend in Europe as to the expansion of user rights for the exploitation of authors' works, we are basically considering a cycle in reverse. So my topic today is about craft art, specifically about carpets in Morocco. So I raised two questions. How can craft gain knowledge of itself so as to benefit from recognition, protection, and a better share in the economic system? How can we expand the creative commons to those with no rights reserved, to some rights reserved? So I need to caution you here because it's really a very preliminary presentation. So I'm going to raise questions, share my ideas, and then we'll see together how it goes. So we have three parts in this presentation. It's the law versus the collective consciousness. Then we raise the question as to how can artisans gain ownership of their authorship. And then we conclude with William Morris, who's still very much relevant today. So how does the law define authorship? An author is defined as the person who creates a work of the mind. The protection of copyrights extends to all works of the mind, irrespective of the type, form of expression, merit, or purpose. And Moroccan law on copyright defines a work of applied art as a work of art with a utilitarian function, whether it be handcrafted or produced through industrial processes. So basically, an artisan, a weaver, as the creator of a work serving a practical purpose, is an author. That was the law says. Sorry, I'm going to have some water. Now, the problem is that there is a semantic and structural challenge to the concept of authorship because the focus is on intellectual activity, on the thinking. So basically, while the law sees the artisan as an author, the collective consciousness sees it as an interpreter. Because the work is inscribed into a technical dynamic rather than intellectual one. And in that, we are the worthy or unworthy receptacle of the Aristotelian distinction between poesis and praxis, which I guess you're familiar with. And in other words, the difference between the how, the why, the skilled, the intellectual, the artist, the artisan. And the 20th century has put even more emphasis on this distinction. So here, my purpose is not to say that an artisan is an artist, or that craft holds artistic value. It does, in my point of view. But it's the whole problematic of modern and contemporary art, which has witnessed a shift from the question of aesthetics to a properly ontological reflection. And basically, craft is really a collateral victim in that shift. Because craft is a language of form and no longer considered as art by the art system. So here what I'm going to try to develop is that an artisan is an author as long as they break free from dogmas. So how can they gain ownership of their authorship? We have basically three dogmas, two of which are related to how artisans see their practice, and the last one is how we perceive craft. So the first dogma is the permanence and inalienability of coded techniques and aesthetics. So under the French protectorate, which lasted between 1912 and 1956, we had what they called at that time the Service of Indigenous Arts. They set up experimental workshops so that they would develop graphic models from different regions of Morocco to get newly produced rugs that would be faithful to the older ones. So here I'm showing you like carpets with the related graphic model from different region of Morocco. And in the 40s, the establishment of cooperatives, which are still ongoing actually, freezes the manufacture of carpets to older models. And we have this corpus of Moroccan carpet that was done between 1932 and 1936 by Prosper Ricard, which is really the an archive, very useful one, for us to see how carpets have evolved through time. But what I'm trying to say here is that subject to heritage preservation, and the continuity of a living and very noble tradition, subject to the establishment of a corpus of carpets, which I agree is very relevant in terms of history, of technicity, but truly they have killed the creativity of the artisan. So here really the question is about finding a balance between different imperatives. The second dogma is about the permanence and inalienability of the belonging to a, we call it terroir, it's like a locality. So basically in Morocco, we have two mountain range. The most fruitful one is the Atlas range. Within the Atlas, we have 24 localities. Within each locality, you have tribes. And each tribe has a specific code of fabrication. For instance, you will go to the Zion territory, you have this type of carpet. Of course, it's only one within maybe 20, depending on the tribes. You have the Bnei Megild, and you will see that there is a recurrent pattern, which is the diamond shape one, the HUC. So these are very technical graphism, but just to show you examples. And of course, the Bni Warain. Nowadays, you will open any architect or design book, you will find this carpet. they call it Bnei Warayin, but it's no longer Bnei Warayin. You need so many specifics that they cannot meet. Basically, what artisans need to do in order to gain their ownership is to go against the dogma that they are held by a geometric, a chromatic, and a symbolic composition that is based on a fixed code of fabrication. They need to break free from those limiting rules. And the Ministry of Craft has been basically assigning designers, artists, to go around Morocco and to work with the artisans so as to give them a new look as to what they do. They've been doing that for the past, 50 years, but somehow it's not working. The artisans are still imprisoned in these beliefs. Speaking of patterns, we have patterns that belong to a coded that is known and recognized. We have patterns that are now forgotten and belonging to a fragmented language. And we have patterns that are made up by artisans. That is very rare for an artisan to make up a pattern. What I'm trying to say here is that the art of tapestry or rug intervenes more in how you're going to combine patterns and colors. The style of a weaver is very much on how she or he will vary the pattern and what colors he's going to use, he or she's going to use. And I'm going to cite a very famous writer and the author of the classic book called Sign to Image, The Moroccan Carpet, Abdelkebir Khatibi. He shed light on how, on the criteria to qualify what he called a beautiful carpet. And by that he means a carpet that is not folkloric. What we call a folkloric carpet is a carpet made without a soul, without art. And he says that the style of a beautiful carpet starts when the prototype that serves as a reference is only a memory, so that the space of time has two decorative functions. Keep the memory of the signs of a group, an ethnic group, a corporation, and add others that are unknown, written in a memory in the making, the time of the art itself. And Adorno says this, has this sentence, which I found very, very right. He says that craft can be art, but not all craft can become art. And in that, him and Khatibi are in line. I'm going to give you an example, a very practical one. Here, we have what we call a Boucherouit carpet. It's basically a carpet made of rugs. It's from the 90s, and it's from the center of Morocco. We don't know who made it. What we see is this very repetitive pattern that we call chevron. So that's a classic way of using the pattern, very geometric. You have one color from a specific region. It's called a Zemmour carpet. And here we can see that the artisan truly made his own piece of art by combining, by injecting some colors that act here as forces to animate the pattern. And here we have another one from a different region of Morocco, and we have the ladder. The ladder is as well a pattern you're going to see again and again. I still don't have enough means to interpret this carpet. I asked an expert who was in Marrakesh, and he said to me that this was probably done by a young weaver, according to the scale, according to the color she uses. So all this to say that it's a science. You cannot just you need really skills to have the right way of looking at carpets. Now we have the third dogma, that the carpet is pure form it bears no significance. In 1985, during a presentation on InterScience, Abdelkebir Khatibi, the same author, started his presentation as follows. I begin with a proposal of analysis and an image. We ought to look at a beautiful carpet as one reads a page from Aristotle. That is, with the same force of attention. So it's always a question of meaning, but put differently. It is we, the viewer, to resolve the invisible threats. The question of meaning that underlies symbols, pictograms, bestiary, floral design, is in itself transformed into ornament, so that we are facing an ornamental thought. He says, what is this thought that sends and does not send a message, that holds a meaning and does not, and that is a passion for color and geometry? What is it unfolding about the visible? So the carpet has its art, is an autonomous plastic composition, a visual thinking. And I'm going to conclude with William Morris, who stated that the happiness of a society is measured in terms of its art, including in its simplest forms. So the full expression of the creative and harmonious work must therefore be found in craft cooperatives, whether in Morocco or elsewhere. But what needs to be is to invite artisans to develop their creativity, and of course to make them work for a market that they can see and understand. That is the only way weavers will gain back their authorship. Thank you. I was very quick.